Let's Talk Letts, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.
Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of our podcast, Let's Talk Letts. I'm Heidi, the CEO of the Lettings Hub, the tenant referencing business that got good at tech, and Let's Talk Letts is our pod, which covers the regular roundup of news and views on a whole range of subjects spanning the private rented sector. Today's podcast is the latest in our regular feature where we explore more about people's personal career stories across the lettings arena, their journey and the moments in their lives and careers that have been the most impactful and taught them some of the most important life lessons. For our next My Life in Lettings themed episode, we are thrilled to be joined by Sat Bassi, the Managing Director of Lettings at Spicer Hart, a business that he has been with and is hugely passionate about for the last 17 years. But there's 32 years in total that he's kind of been within our sector. And it's only in recent times that I have met him personally and got to know him. So I'm delighted to introduce him to you today. And Sat, if I can allow you to introduce yourself, tell our listeners a little bit more about you and obviously Spicer Hart.
Hi, Heidi. How are you doing? Thank you for allowing me this opportunity to talk about myself today. So I'm Sat Bassi. I'm the Managing Director of Spicer Hart Residential Lettings. As you could probably tell from my accent, I'm just born and bred around the Birmingham area. And I've been in the lettings business, as you've already said, for 32 years. Extremely passionate about my job, extremely passionate about people. I'm looking forward to today's conversation and talking about what got me into this position to hopefully inspire others to do the same.
Yeah, and I definitely think from knowing Sat before today and even when we were kind of talking about this podcast, inspiring people to be passionate about the industry and to want to make a career in this industry is definitely something that he is all about. So let's go right back to the beginning of how your career started in lettings. We're really keen to hear about how you came into lettings and the property sector, maybe what and who inspired you along the way, and also how the market and the industry has changed.
Right, okay, let's rewind back. We're going back to 1992. I just graduated at Greenwich University at the time. I had an opportunity of joining a very well-known building society that operate around the Woolwich area. You can probably guess who it was. When they used to do the old milk rounds, which is take the best economic students, offer them opportunities and work within the roles there. And I was lucky enough to be one of those individuals that was sat in front of one of the Woolwich branches. I was sat in there, watched the day to see how I liked it. And the truth of it, Heidi, I absolutely hated it. The idea of putting a suit on and even though I'm supposed to be helping people, telling people whether they can have that loan or not have that loan. And I very, very much quickly decided it wasn't for myself. The other bit about it was I fell in love with a very beautiful lady that I've been married to now for 31 years with.
Oh, congratulations.
That was one of the reasons why I had to tell my father, who at that time on every Sikh wedding, and if anybody's gone to those Sikh weddings, you will know there's always a copious amount of alcohol being drinking, telling everyone of his friends whose sons were solicitors, etc., that my son's going to be a bank manager. Far from it. I had to tell him that day, I still remember it to this day, that Dad, I don't want to do that job. Didn't speak to me for the best part of a couple of months. I had a note from my mother who said, actually, your dad's got you a job. It's with his first cousin, who was an estate agent in Coventry at that time, with two branches. And I literally was then sent to Coventry. My uncle took me on board. Let me describe what it was like then. There was no computers, there was an answering machine. The majority of the viewings took place during lunch hours. As you can imagine, you walked into the morning, it was answering machine message. Everything was printed out, documents, printed out paperwork, etc.
Fax machines, I guess, were around then as well, were they?
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah. So you get the gist of it. And I know what the gist was because my uncle told me. He said my dad said that the other job was still open, for another couple of months, and the plan was to actually get me to hate being an estate agent, so I revert back to taking that job back down in London. And little did my father know that I actually loved it. I actually loved the idea of putting a suit on and being advisory to people, going out and helping people. And the most important thing when I fell in love with the job that I do now, or what I've done ever since, is that you were dealing with tangible products called properties. And when you start looking at the relationship between clients and their properties, you actually just know it's more than just a value. So I fell in love with the job then. I was an estate agent. The market changed. Just getting to that, market changed. Those that remember that dip in the middle of in the 90s. Mm-hmm. I don't believe it was a dip. I think actually that's when your best estate agents came to the fore, because it's not about the ones that land business on the laps. You have to go and get the work done. So a really good proactive attitude was always needed. And the market changed. It went into lettings. And I remember my uncle dropping me. I remember it was a green book. I still can't remember what was in it, but it was learn that. We're going to open a lettings business. And that's exactly what I did. I learned it, opened the doors. There was no computers those days. There was a ledger book where I had to do the ledger of every tenancy and every cost and everything that needed to get done. I did that, and I fell in love with the idea of going out and speaking to people, talking about their properties, renting their properties out and moving forward. But I think probably just before the career, what probably got me more accustomed to that is my father made his fortunes and made whatever he needed to get out of life through property. He was a very distinguished tool maker, but he taught me that actually a job 9 to 5 itself ain't going to make you what you need to get to in life. And so some of my school holidays were spent painting this property, that property. I hated it. I'm still absolutely awful at any manual task, as my wife will tell you. But that's where I started getting understanding where my dad got the passion from, reading the local paper as it came out with the local properties showing in there and having to go out do viewings with him. So you naturally went into that property feel that it mattered something, that there was other things that you could get out of it. But
I guess it painted a future as well, didn't it? When you're young and then you're impressionable and you could watch it happening.
Well, the whole idea of actually putting a suit on and people coming to you for advice was fantastic. And when I first went and touched the waters of lettings, I realised actually I fell in love with this job, because no 2 days were ever the same. And they're still to this day, 32 years on, they're still never the same. And I think that intrigue, that changeability, that unknowingness, and it's still a relatively young industry, Heidi, as you probably well know yourself. Yeah. And I still haven't come across the so-called lettings oracle anywhere, because it's so moving so quickly that you have to move with it.
And obviously we're a people business, and people are so fascinating. You know, they're crazy at times, but you know, you can learn so much from people. And obviously for you, you've got your team, you've got your tenancy landlords, other agents, you know, through that whole journey, there's so many kind of encounters that you have along the way. So let's kind of talk about some of the people that are the most memorable, either, you know, people that have, you know, really influenced you. You mentioned your dad, obviously that's one, but other people that you've kind of worked with. And also, I suppose what I'm keen to understand is there's people in my career that I've learned a lot from, but I've also learned what not to do. So I can, you know, you can watch them and see what they do. And you think, okay, well, I really like that bit, but I definitely wouldn't do it that way. Who are the standout people for you?
Wow. Okay. So many. If you span back 32 years, the people that, your first encounter, I think my uncle was certainly one very impressionable individual to me, because he treated me like family when he wanted to be like family, and treated me like an employee when he wanted to be an employee. And I learned very, very quickly that the art of man management and making sure everybody's on the same page. So I think my uncle was also incredibly driven. He was a champion bodybuilder. He was very, very used to winning himself. So I guess that's going to be the, you know, a big theme of today's call. But he's always used to winning. He hated losing. He was a bit sorest loser in the world. So when you're actually going up against a competition or a valuation, you could come out with whatever reasoning why you didn't get it. It was never good enough. So you learn that actually you always keep going back. So resilience was something certainly from my uncle. I then went from an independent to a very large business called Eagle Oak at that time, which was a Birmingham business that actually looked after the Johnson Fry portfolio, all those properties that got repossessed in the mid-90s, 80s, etc. We looked after those units, and there was a lot of units there. And there was a chap that I actually also worked with at Spice Art as well. It was a chap called Clive Tomlinson. And if he's listening, it's a big shout out to you, Clive. And Clive, I worked for Clive, and my job was an inspections manager. My inspections manager job was going out and seeing all the worst things that you could ever see, seeing bailiffs appointments, all the dark side of lettings. But he actually taught me with the biggest of smiles on faces that actually, this is it. This is, you should be enjoying sorting out solutions. Valerie Bannister, she, again, if she's listening, she'll remember that first inventory that she taught me to do at that property in Telford with the next door neighbour.
I bet that was a fun one.
Yeah, rang the police. Valerie was incredibly passionate about lettings, taught me a lot, taught me how professional lettings work. Countrywide had lots of stalwarts. John Hards was incredibly impressionable to me. The late Mike Price was my regional director at that time. He was incredibly supportive, and rest in peace, Mike. Will always be remembered by that team of Countrywide people during that time. So Mike was really good. And then Andrew Berry brought me over to Spice of Heart. Always got time for Andrew. Lots of people in Spice of Heart. But I think working for Paul Smith for near on 17 years has been probably the most inspirational. Again, it reminds me a bit like my uncle. Not that you're that old, Paul, but you know where I'm coming from. In terms of that, winning does matter. Winning was really, really matter, and the passion behind property also came through. So lots and lots of people. In fact, probably lots of people that I actually worked with at that time or worked for. But I think the number of people that actually worked with me, for me, alongside me, those are the people that really matter and shaped what I am today.
And I was obviously personally thrilled to join you and your team at the Scorpio Spring Conference earlier in the year. And it wasn't just a pleasure. It was a really inspirational event. I obviously don't need to remind you, but of course, the theme of the event was around winning matters, to the point that you just raised, which I believe is a fundamental business principle. This is very much the culture that you've built at Spice of Heart. Why do you believe it's so key to drive a winning team?
Well, we can't take the whole credit for it. I think the credit is going to go back to our 2021 conference from Spice of Heart, where we had the legendary Sean Fitzpatrick, who's a captain of the All Blacks, talk about his book, which is Winning Matters. And it really resonates with our business, because the business always wants to, anything it needs to do, it needs to win for its client. It needs to win. It needs to get its best rent, best tenant, best price, best product, best protection. It needs to make sure that we win for our people. Everything about making sure all our people get the best possible development. And it also makes sure that anything that you're doing every single day has a notion of winning. And winning could be the smallest things. It could be the most immeasurable things. But as long as winning matters to yourself, and that word called joy comes into it, then that creates a really good environment for people to flourish. And if you just talk very, very quickly about my opportunities that you get through life as you start performing and you get other opportunities, I don't think you would be able to do that unless you have that winning mentality. So yeah. As long as you're going forward, Heidi, as long as you keep striving for the best that you can do, second is, it's like Bill Shankly old saying, with football, you know, first is everything, second is nothing. You know, second is something, but it's that winning mentality, that mindset of making sure that you are the first across the line. And I said before, winning doesn't really matter about the result either. Winning for us is the effort that goes behind the result. As long as you get that, then everything, I think, falls.
And culturally, I've definitely seen that in action, like the whole team buy into that and they're totally behind it. I just want to kind of go back to a couple of things that you've said. You've talked about resilience, and I am a massive fan of resilience, and I think it's lacking these days. Like, it's one thing that for me personally, I try and instill in my children hugely, because I just think we've become a bit flaky, actually, over the years. But also, I suppose, so I'm keen to kind of get your thoughts on how important resilience is and how it's been for you over the years. But also, do you think you have to kind of be open to learn, you know, as a person, and constantly watching other people around you and trying to suck in information and, you know, trying to be the best that you can be? How important has that been along the journey as well?
Yeah, I think you're really question about, you know, who inspires you, you know, who have you learned from. I think we're all a makeup of everybody that's good around us. And I think if you know, there's no such thing as we were born absolutely fantastic. You pick the best things from absolutely everybody. But having that constant growth mindset is incredibly important. It's really, really important that, and to keep an open stance with everything that you need to look at and do each and every single day is absolutely paramount. So it's ensuring that, you know, resilience itself. Resilience is incredibly important, but the ability to actually understand that you're not on your own. There's always a solution to every problem. And you know, as long as you are solution minded and you learn from other people, you're humble enough to actually go and ask or reach out on something that you're not familiar with is an incredible strength. I don't think that's a weakness. But resilience in this job is, you're absolutely right. I think the world has changed. I think the new phenomenon that's in now, which is this thing called work-life balance, and I think that actually as a society, and with all the Gen Zs and the Gen Xs and everything else who've moved on, which I'm au fait with, knowing a 15-year-old daughter coming on 21. But I think working hard is an understatement at the end of the day. It seems like a real problem. And working hard is the most important thing that you can actually do in your working life. You live once, you might as well work as hard as you can to get the best results of it as you can. So it was I listened to a podcast and they said, imagine telling Edison or Henry Ford that actually what's important is work-life balance. Then you wouldn't have those Ford vehicles on the business being what it is today. And certainly we wouldn't have had the light bulb. You know, if you ask those people, they worked hard. And resilience was, you know, hundreds of failures for Edison, but that one that he came out with brought light to the world, if metaphorically.
Yeah, I think as well, it's about outlook, isn't it? You know, even if it's no matter how many hours that you work in a day, if you can try and get the maximum out of those hours and try and look at every hour positively, that you're going to achieve something and you're going to make something better and something's going to improve, and you use those hours really wisely, it's way more rewarding.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
And I do think one of the things that makes Sap unique is that he's done every job, you know, in letting. So right from the bottom, doing property management and actually then going out and doing lettings all the way, obviously, up to being an MD of a pretty big empire. How much has that helped you, Sap, along the way?
It's helped me immensely, because when you're making decisions, you're making informed decisions. You're actually in that particular cockpit at that time. You understand the challenges, you understand the what it's like doing that particular job, to then understanding what's actually going to work with that job. You know, it very, very quickly do we make decisions based on a spreadsheet or a flow chart without realizing the number of different facets there are to this business. That's why we're still in it. because there's so many things that are in it. So I think learning and being successful in property management has really, you know, really helped me understand the why. Why do landlords actually own properties? Is it just because it was a spare property? What do they look for? What's the biggest concerns that they have? And just like an RL point of view about making sure that you're the best at marketing, you're the first thought for every landlord coming through, but the attraction piece. So it gave me a very, very good understanding as we went, as I grew my career and understood each particular job, understood actually you could be the best at everything in those particular separate disciplines. And that in itself would be a fantastic career for you.
And I think as well, you know, your outlook on things is very much making the best from every opportunity. So if I talk about Spicer Heart are hugely focused on generating value by offering, like you mentioned before, additional products, opportunities, ancillary services, looking at obviously the situation that you have in front of you and then maximizing it for the good of the client, for the good of everybody's bank balance, for making sure people have got the adequate protection, making sure people are aware that actually these things exist and actually you can make it really easy for them to kind of transact. Why is that so important? And to me, that's one of the things that's made Spicer Heart hugely special in our industry and space.
Yeah, I think if you look at the predominantly the estate agency market, it's about selling. You know, you take a property and you sell it, you get a mortgage. It's very transactions, very probably two-dimensional. With lettings, in other words, in the estate agency, you know how you're going to be making your money. With lettings, it's all about different income streams. And income streams are important. And we've already seen the changes in the marketplace with the tenant fee ban, and how that affected estate agents or letting agents, should I say, and how we had to adapt to find different income streams to make up that shortfall. The same applies in every income stream that you will get. It probably goes down to originally looking and seeing my father have houses burnt down, not having the right insurance, and then having copious amount of arrears and seeing his health deteriorate, having to take tenants to court. And then understanding actually, oh my God, there's products out there that can actually protect all these risk environments. And if you look at the lettings business, it's a return business, but you've got to be risk averse. You have to manage your risk. It's a risk management business. I had a very, very simple process with this. Landlords will have three main concerns. Okay. If you're a landlord yourself, like I am, you'll know that everyone will hit a chord with everybody that's a landlord. The first concern that you'll have is making sure that you get your property in the condition that you gave it. The second concern that you have got is making sure that you get your property back when you need it back, because you're entering legal documentation and possession is 4/5 of the law. And the third one is ensuring that your rent is paid on time and in full. Now you can categorize all this minor different risks involved, but they will fall into those three categories. And if you actually have your business model based on those three things, then you need the assistance of not only your word, and the referencing was great and the tenant was okay, because no one's seen tomorrow, you know, no one's got a crystal ball. So you have to make sure that you protect people's assets and their returns. So in other words, understanding why they've got an asset. Is it their pension? Is it for their daughter's wedding? Understanding the why. So you have to protect that asset. And the way to protect that asset is to actually create a really good bond with that landlord, offer a fantastic service, and make sure that it's backed up by having the best possible protection, because you are there to manage their risk. The reason why our industry will sometimes get a very, very bad reputation is that we're in a great position of sitting in front of landlords in their lounges and being the expert that they're going to be listening to. So yeah, being a proper expert, properly take time to actually look at the risks involved. And by doing that, I think the sale looks after itself. I think not the selling, it's the education piece. It's the, I can't promise you this. Yes, I'll try and get you the best tenant possible, but nothing's going to be guaranteed. And have you thought about this? And have you thought about that? If we can protect landlords' assets, then we will be their agent and their partner for life. I don't think we're an agent, I think we're a partner. We're an investment partner of theirs.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think, you know, we need as letting agents to be seen, you know, to the same value as an accountant, you know, that they would see, in terms of they would trust them, they would go and get advice, they feel that they've got their back and they're going to kind of do things properly. I think landlords don't always turn to agents for the same level of advice or help. You know, if they're thinking of making a portfolio investment decision, or, you know, whether they dispose of the property or whether they should put the rent up, I don't think there is necessarily that interaction. And I think as an industry, if we could get brilliant at that, then I think we're on to a winner. Now, in a world, and definitely in an industry where people tend to move around a lot from one business to another, it's really interesting that you've stayed at the same organisation for quite a long time.
Yeah, well, absolutely. In terms of why, I think when you're sitting in front of somebody and you're on a job interview, and my parents will tell you it's the best type of marriage, it's like an arranged marriage. You see each other, you talk about what you both want, and if both parties deliver with what they're wanting to do, then that love grows, then you start understanding, actually, you know what, everything that we both wanted out of a career, myself and the company wanted out of myself, because it's a two-way commitment, then it will work. When it won't work is when one party renegates on their commitments. And I'm very, very fortunate enough to be working for a business that's actually delivered on its side of the arrangement. And through that, you start understanding, actually, you know, there's give and take, there's movement, you get brought into the project, you get brought into the people. And I think that's the bit that everybody needs, you get brought into the people. And loyalty for me is incredibly important. It really is important. And the only way that loyalty will actually fail in any walk of life is that if there's a huge factor or an episode that's taken place to actually breach that particular trust. So, you know, the business has allowed me to continue to develop. It's offered the training, support. It's been there when I needed the business in terms of my own challenges as people go through personal lives, you know, losing parents, losing sisters, things like that. So it's been there for me for that duration. And I think it's incredibly important. You know, if you are, you know, it's a two-way thing. And one thing I will say to absolutely everybody is that, you know, you've got to be with your business a long time if you really value your landlord's relationship. If you really value your landlord's relationship and you understand what it means to them, that they're not really looking at a business that's offering them, they're looking at an individual. And if you have the same sort of approach with your employer, then I think that's a winning formula, in my opinion, ID.
Yeah, and actually, it's such a happy career. And to your point about, you know, how important work-life balance is or not, actually, if actually you are passionate about how you spend your work, it doesn't have to be a compromise, does it, along the way? Actually, it can blend really well.
Oh, absolutely, 100%. You know, my old saying is, you know, do as I do, not as I say. And if you have a culture of that, then you win.
So if we go back to the early days, did you ever have a dream job when you were younger? of something that, you know, you really, you know, wanted to do?
Oh, gosh. We're going to go back to the mid 80s now. And I remember a conversation. Computers had just come out, or the personal computers had come out. My father turned around and said, if you get a certain number of grades, I'll buy you, I think it was a Commodore 16. It was the biggest thing. And I was incredibly, you know, I was a bright kid, but it was more about humor and playing football and other things as you were growing up. And I remember by fluke, I managed to get those results. And I remember a conversation with my father, he was getting really serious. He said, "Son, what do you want to do when you grow up?" I said, "Dad, I want to be an actor." And he said, "Son, it's actually pronounced doctor." And that news that got me thinking that actually, hold on a minute, the arts is not something that my father would actually want. I didn't really have anything I needed to want it to be. I would suggest that to every individual growing up. I think you will find your own path. You've just got to try different things to understand what you want. Love the fact that I'm dealing with people. I love the fact I was interacting with people. And I think anything to do with people, I think I would have been really happy with. So the sheer fact that I ended up with property and people, that's like the perfect
dream ticket.
Yeah, it is.
So I'm sure our listeners would love to know a little bit more about you personally as well. So some of the adventures that you may have been on, you know, the ups and downs of life. What's your life like beyond lettings?
Wow. Okay. I try and go away now and see historical cities and done the beach walks and whatever like that. So I like to learn more about different places and things like that. Lucky enough, my daughter took us to Greece just recently and did the whole tour package. So I know all about the Parthenon and whatever. So I've managed to read up on that. I'm an avid Aston Villa supporter. So it's a football team by the way, Heidi.
I've heard of them.
Okay. I like to catch up with football. I like to socialise with my friends, like to meet up with my friends as well. We're very, very family orientated as well. So I'm lucky enough to have a lot of family in the United Kingdom and sister at home in India. I have a lot of family in Canada and America, etc. So we tend to be speaking a lot with each other. But in terms of other activities or hobbies, I've got the worst metabolic rate in the world. So I'll put weight on very, very quickly and I'll try and take it off very, very quickly. So I'm either constantly in the gym or constantly out the gym. So it varies. But I like to meet people, speak to people, family, friends, neighbours.
And you mentioned a special lady as well that you've been with for, did you say 31 years?
31, well, I've known her for 34, but I've been married to her for 31.
Oh. And so how has that kind of, you know, we've talked about your dad, we've talked about your uncle, we've talked about your wife in this session. Family are obviously really key to you. But also, how have they made your career possible?
Get out SAT 1, get out the house, go and earn some money. I think we've been very, very lucky that we're incredibly ambitious in anything that we did. If you're going to do something, then do it extremely well. Otherwise, don't do it at all. I think I've been very, very lucky that all my family, and I actually do it for them as well. So they you know, lots of them are very hardworking. And that just becomes a part of who we are, let's say. So in other words, if there was one of us that weren't working or in between jobs, they would be like scorned upon, like, you know, what are you doing? It came in from a DNA thing, I think. I think that the DNAs actually go out and work. But they've been incredibly supportive. I mean, my wife, with the hours that I put in and sacrifice. Ultimately, it's sacrificing the time I'd be spending with her and Jay. But the sheer fact that she allows me to do it and a summer house office in the back garden so she can keep me out of her hair as well, just shows that actually, you know, working matters, winning matters. So I think it's really important. So I think we've got a good relationship on that front. So when we do enjoy ourselves, we do tend to let whatever hair I've got left on my head down.
Well, that has been so lovely to hear your story, and I'm sure it's been hugely inspirational to so many, definitely our listeners, but so many people that, you know, you're so humble, you take it so personally, so seriously, the winning aspect is so important, and it definitely makes you an all-round lovely guy. Now, but before you go, our regular listeners of Let's Talk Let's will know that we always ask every podcast guest a funny story or anecdote from their time in the property industry. So have you got one for us today?
Oh, gosh. Well, there's going to be certain ones that I won't be able to say on air, naturally, which I'll take a fair bit. I would probably suggest taking a possession of a property in a suburb called Handsworth that time, meeting a bailiff. And there was a family that was quite notorious at that time that was in the neighbourhood. Little did I know that we were actually carrying out the bailiff orders on that particular property. So I remember turning up with the bailiff about 11:30 in the morning it was, and knocked on the door, and I was presented with an individual that had a shotgun in their hands.
Oh, Lord.
And the individual was frothing at the mouth, and all that came out of my mouth was, "I'm just the agent, he's the bailiff." Pointed at them. So plenty of those sort of things, but that was wit and save yourself at one moment in time, which the bailiff didn't thank me for afterwards. But that was one I could share with everybody.
I think that's the thing, is in the lettings industry we get so used to so many things happening that we then don't actually know what is not normal life anymore, but that would definitely be character building.
Absolutely.
So Sat, thank you so much for your time. I'm sure our listeners would have thoroughly enjoyed listening to you. For everybody that is listening, to ensure that you never miss an episode of Let's Talk Let's, please follow us on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please leave us a review if you like what you hear. And thank you all so much for listening. And a big thank you to you, Sat.
Let's Talk Let's, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.